This is WMRA's Second Look, a look back at some of the stories and conversations from the WMRA newsroom this week. I'm Bob Levicky. Did you know that inmates in Virginia's local jails have to pay for the facilities in which they've been incarcerated?
Inmates pay $3 a day for a cell. They pay $15 a day to work a low-wage job on the outside. They pay, of course, for commissary items and the use of the phone, and they pay for health care. At Middle River, they pay $25 to see a doctor. They pay a deductible and out-of-pocket costs, just like you and me.
Patricia Bournes is a reporter for the Newsleader in Stanton. I talked with her earlier this week, along with former inmate Sedana Wilmot, about the lack of programs dedicated to helping the growing number of women inmates make the transition to life outside, and how the system makes it harder for them to escape. Stay tuned for Second Look. But first, this news. This is Second Look, a look back at some of the stories and conversations from our newsroom this week. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. We'll get to Martha's conversation with writer Erica Raskin later in the show, as well as my conversation with the Stanton Newsleader's Patricia Bournes and ex-inmate Sedana Wilmot about helping women make the transition from jail to life outside. But first, let's take that tour of the Stanton music scene with WMRA's Lou Ann Austin. It's part of a series on the arts in our area.
Nearly any night of the week, live music is happening in downtown Stanton. From hard rock to jazz to choral, there are genres here to suit most musical tastes. The venues vary too, including restaurants, churches, museums, parks, and even the streets, thanks to the city's liberal busking policy. Let's go first to Marino's Grill, where musicians have been jamming on Tuesday nights for three decades.
When we first started in the 80s or 90s, it was just pretty much the regular people. But like I said, since Facebook and all that stuff's happening, they come in from all over. Well, actually, before then, they came in from all over the place when they heard it. But we've had just all different kinds of people just walk through the doors.
Knowles, who is 65, plays guitar and dobro and sings. He describes the music at Marino's as folk or Americana. One customer describes it online as, quote, a robust acoustic jam ranging from bluegrass to old time to country to western swing to whatever, depending on who shows up.
Sometimes, of course, the place is small, and sometimes there's as many as three bands playing in here, which is unbelievable. There's one up front and one here in the back, and there's a little patio, smoking patio outside, and they're out there playing on a good summer night. So it's like sometimes it's just almost more musicians than there are people who are listening.
Another longstanding tradition is Wednesday night jazz at the Mill Street Grill. That tradition was threatened in January when another downtown restaurant, Emilio's, was served with a lawsuit from Broadcast Music Incorporated for copyright infringement. Concerned the same could happen to Mill Street, owner Terry Holmes put a halt to jazz nights while he worked out a deal. Lou Morrison, the man who makes jazz happen in Stanton, says the music was up and running again in a few weeks.
Terry is paying a lot of money to ASCAP and BMI, and we are not going to pay the other copyright owner. We're going to void their music. We got, you know, with ASCAP and BMI, we got way over a million possible tunes. So we've been going through our music that we normally play and making sure that what we're going to be playing will either be owned by ASCAP or BMI, and anything else, we're just going to avoid it. But we'll still have a million tunes.
On most Wednesdays, Mill Street is packed, but even customers who go every week never hear the same music twice.
What I do at the Mill Street Grill keeps it spontaneous because I have different guys every week. I've had way over 200 musicians at the Mill Street Grill. I go out of my way to put guys together that haven't played together. Like I had a Hammond organ player from Charlottesville Wednesday night, and I put him with a guitar player from Columbia, South Carolina, and mixed in a drummer, you know, and I do that all the time, and we get some great spontaneity like that.
Stanton really comes alive with music in the summer. Gypsy Hill Park hosts concerts four nights a week, including the Stonewall Brigade Band, which starts its 127th season there this June. The Wharf area is host to the weekly Shakin' at the Station and events at the new Sunspots Pavilion. Summer is also the time when classical music struts its stuff. The Heifetz International Music Institute brings young musicians to Mary Bolvin College for intense training and offers public concerts throughout the 6 weeks. Then, in August, the Stanton Music Festival presents 20 concerts of chamber music over 10 days. Last year, 5,000 people attended performances by musicians from around the world. Jason Stell is the festival's executive director.
I think it's a very interesting time to be involved with it because the story tends to get batted around that classical music is on the demise, seems to be dropping out in a lot of the bigger cities in certain ways. Symphony orchestras going under. And we have experienced, in at least in the time that I've been involved with the festival, which has been since 2005, nothing but steady growth each year. And that means not only growth in income and number of events, but also more and more people coming each year from further and further away.
When John Huggins moved to Stanton 10 years ago, he brought with him his desire to share with others the music he loves best, blues. This August, he'll be putting on the 7th Annual Blues and Brews Festival at the Frontier Culture Museum. Huggins has been promoting other music events around Stanton and Augusta County, too, and started a Saturday morning radio show with local musicians playing live in the studio.
My gift is promoting, and that's where I'm good at, and musicians got to have someone to promote them to make it, so I feel like I'm just as much a part of as they are. You know, I just like seeing people have a good time or dance some or, you know, all the good stuff.
Again, Jason Stell.
What I think happens in Stanton that maybe is part of what makes it distinctive or recognizable is that you have this rather compact town center in which during those summer months, if you come down for the festival, you can every day hear live music. But there's other music going on in restaurants, street corners, actually, in some cases. So you find that people are coming, not only the locals, but also people from out of town, and they come and they are able to experience a real mix of musical styles.
For WMRA News, I'm Luann Austin.
There aren't very many programs to help female inmates in Virginia's jails make the transition to life outside. Patricia Bourns is a reporter for the News Leader in Stanton, and she's been telling the story of one such program at the Middle River Regional Jail near Stanton. I spoke with her and with Sudana Wilmot, who is getting her life together after spending several months in Middle River with help from that program. It's called On the Wings of Angels. I began by asking Patricia Bourns about the growing proportion of women in jail in Virginia.
I think that women, they are a very small proportion of the incarcerated population, and that's true in Virginia as well as nationally. But they're increasing much at a much faster rate in jails, and there are very few transitional programs for them. That's probably because they are a minority. And the other reason, I think, is that jails were originally intended for short stays. Now inmates are staying longer.
And you're talking about jails as opposed to prisons, part of the prison system, right?
That's correct, yeah. Yes. Jails were meant for short stays, but the mindset is still they're only there for a short time. Why invest in their improvement?
Right. Can you tell me about the Middle River Regional Jail? That was a big part of your story. And I'm particularly interested in the fact that at facilities such as Middle River, inmates actually have to pay some of the cost for being jailed there and for things such as health care, right?
Right. Virginia jails are locally run. So yours may vary, and that includes, you know, Middle River will be different than other jails.
Okay.
That's a big difference between jails in Virginia and prisons, which are centrally organized. They're accredited. Prisons are accredited. Jails are not, and they have a lot of local authority. So for instance, at Middle River, inmates pay $3 a day for a cell. They pay $15 a day to work a low-wage job on the outside.
So they have to pay for the right to have some sort of work release.
Correct. Okay. Right. They pay, of course, for commissary items and the use of the phone, and they pay for health care. At Middle River, they pay $25 to see a doctor. They pay a deductible and out-of-pocket costs, just like you and me. And they also pay for a public defender. It's on a sliding scale. But my understanding is it could be over $1,000 per count for some crimes. So many of these inmates are released with heavy debts, and when they can't pay them, they can be reincarcerated. So it's almost like a debtor's prison.
Yeah, and kind of a catch-22 there where they get released and there are restrictions on things they can do once they get out of prison that may also limit their ability to earn the money to pay their debt.
Right, starting with the fact that they can't get a driver's license back until they've paid off their debt, so
yeah.
They can't commute to a job.
Right, yeah, and so important for so many people to be able to commute to their jobs, to be able to drive there.
Right.
Right. And so, Dana, can you tell me about the reentry program that's helping you adjust to life after prison?
It's a really good program if you're willing to change, but you have to be willing to change, and a lot of women are, but we just didn't have that opportunity. So being that we had the opportunity when On the Wings of Angels came to Middle River, you know, having that class, it was like that was a start right there, you know, because women want to change, you know, when you sit and you think about, you know, everything, and you replay your life, you know, but when you're in a jail that doesn't really offer much, you don't really know where to start because you're just sitting in a pod. So that was our start when the first time we walked in the classroom. And the women, you know, they're really wanting to help. Long as we want to help ourselves, they stand behind us 100%, and I'm very thankful for them. I'm going to allow them to help me, and they're great women. You know, we don't have a transitional house around this area for women, you know.
Right.
Other women in different areas, they have that. You know, sometimes they can finish off the rest of their time there. We don't have that. That's something we need, and I feel like it would benefit. It would help a lot of women, and that's their start to be able to change right there, because sometimes we're looking, you know, we just don't know where to start.
And Sedana, part of Patricia's reporting, and we were just talking about it a minute ago, was about the trouble that you have once you get out of jail, because you actually incur debt while you're in jail in order to pay for the cell and to pay commissary costs. And then when you get out, there are restrictions on things like your ability to get a driver's license. Is that affecting you? And can you tell me about the debt that you incurred while in prison and how that's affecting you?
Yes. Getting out is very hard because, first of all, being a felon, some people look at that and they judge, you know. And when you come out, you know, not only had you already paid your debt to society and you have done time for you, whatever you had done wrong, not only do you have to do that, but you come back out and you have to pay court costs for going to court. it messes with your license. You know, your license can be suspended, and don't, you know, what you were incarcerated for might not have anything to do with driving, but they will suspend your license.
Right.
Then you have to pay reinstatement fee before you can even, you know, take the test. So it's a lot because it's already hard to find jobs. And then being a felon, it makes it even harder. So it's like, where do you start? How do you pay all these different things? And it's hard to get hired out here because you're being judged just because you're a felon, but we're all human, you know? So I feel like we do deserve a chance. And if we mess that up, then that's on us. But I feel like women, men, we deserve a chance getting out. Being inside the jail, you know, paying $3 a day in Middle River, it was hard. You know, I never knew a jail. People that was there from other jails didn't understand why we paid so much. You're paying $3 a day, you know. You have to have commissary because the food is not, a lot of it is not, you know, edible.
Mm-hmm.
So you're spending a lot of money on that. The $3 a day is taken from you.
Patricia, what lessons do you think we can learn from Sedana's story and the stories of others in your report, and what can be done to improve their experiences and those of other women in their situation?
I think the most important thing that we can learn is that these women need a focus on change, you know, from the day that they come in to jail. You know, a focus, a habilitative focus, you know, not a sort of an expectation that they're going to fail, that they'll never go anywhere, but that they are going to go somewhere better. And that's where the focus needs to be every step of the way through their jail experience and afterwards.
Well, Patricia, it's an excellent report. I appreciate it, and I thank you again for your time. It's good to talk with you again.
Thanks. You too, Bob. Thank you so much.
Sedana, thank you very much for talking about your experience, and I wish you the best of luck.
Thank you so much, and thanks for this interview.
You'll find links to Patricia Bournes' reporting on this story and more information about the On the Wings of Angels program at WMRA.org and at newsleader.com. Now, to Martha Woodruff's conversation with writer Erica Raskin. Erica grew up the child of human rights activist Marcus Raskin and novelist Barbara Raskin. Her own first novel, Close, came out in October. It's this week's installment of The Spark.
I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. I first met writer Erica Raskin when I ran one of her essays on WMRA. I re-met her when we were put on the same panel at the Virginia Festival of the Book. Close tells the story of a well-educated, loving single mother and her three daughters who end up on a TV psychology show.
This plot twist of the TV psychologist, where did that come from?
From my many hours of watching television.
There is fiction in the space between you and everybody.
I am the daughter of writers. My mom wrote fiction, and my dad wrote political things, true things. So ever since I was little, I've just been writing, because that's just what we did. I had a very interesting childhood.
Yeah.
Because my dad, Marcus Raskin, was one of the leaders of the anti-war movement, and he was on trial with Dr. Spock, so he was part of the Boston Five. So it was an incredibly interesting childhood because there was so many interesting people in and out. And our house was sort of the hub for people coming in and would stay there when there'd be anti-war demonstrations and civil rights stuff. And so it was cool. That was just how we grew up.
And where did your mother fit in all this?
Her story was interesting in that she was very big in the women's movement. And I just remember a very funny, I can't remember if it was an article about her or something that she said, but she was talking about how, the husbands and wives would go to the anti-war demonstrations together, and then the wives would be watching their watches because they'd have to get home to relieve the babysitters. So she had a very different take on how things were. The labor was shared.
Education?
I was kind of one of those school shoppers. I went to many schools, including one that my dad started called a free school, the Forum Free School, which he started for a friend's son who got bounced from like three or four private schools. And he just started the school for kids in the neighborhood and friends from the anti-war movement. Kids, and then like these wild people were our teachers, physicists, big name physicists, and it was interesting. It was in this old funky row house in D.C. and
so you had a kind of a non-traditional family life,
yes.
Or a how would you describe
it? Well, see, my mom would say it was very traditional in that she had to run home and take care of the kids. But it was also non-traditional in that it was different. It was we knew about things. We knew about the Vietnam War. We knew about unfairness down the street. I mean, we were taught things like that.
Did you have a sense that you were different?
I don't think I thought that, no. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I was trained to do, which was my dad used to always say, we'd be someplace and he'd say, okay, what's that person's story? And then we would be making up backstories for, your average person crossing the street. And so that was how I became a writer, I think, because, we always were coming up with interesting plots for people who had no idea.
Where'd you go to college?
I started at University of Wisconsin, but it was too cold, and I transferred to Barnard in New York.
Okay. Tell me about Erica in college.
Erica in college originally wanted to major in psychology and then found out, A, you had to do statistics, and B, you had to touch rats in the lab. So I had a identity crisis, ended up majoring in history, mostly because it was writing a paper instead of a big exam at the end. But throughout, I was writing. I don't know why it didn't occur to me that I could write.
Right.
But I didn't. It didn't.
Erica Raskin worked as a caseworker and a congressional assistant before, as she puts it, she and her husband had many children and eventually moved to Charlottesville. All this time, Erica says, she was writing. Why? I asked.
I have to. And I mean, I love words. I love playing with words. I love hearing them. I love reading. I love to write. I love to read.
Mm-hmm. Why fiction? Why storytelling?
Well, because you can choose what happens, which I like to do. And I like figuring out why people do things. I mean, I feel like if you get to know a character, it will make sense why they respond in a certain way or what makes them tick. And that's, I mean, if you're doing that in a nonfiction setting, you'd probably just be sued or something. But this, you know, you just try to make it make sense. And I think people do make sense in a lot of ways, and people act consistently. You just have to find out why they do. I love studying people and how people end up in whatever spot they're in at that moment. It fascinates me. So for instance, in Close, how does that family, who I think a lot of people would maybe want to be friends with because they're nice people, how do they end up on TV sort of exposing themselves to the world? And that's what's interesting to me, is how do seemingly normal, nice people end up in situations like that?
It's published?
It's published.
What difference does that make to you?
It makes a huge difference.
Because,
I mean, and this is, I'm sure there are people out there who will just roll their eyes, but it's legitimizing. I don't feel like it was, you know, all the hours that I spent doing it was just kind of a hobby. It feels like it's a real thing.
And why does that matter?
It matters because it's work. I mean, my husband, who is a doctor, he goes to work and he accomplishes things, and he has always supported my writing. But I wanted that too. I wanted to feel like what I was doing was real also.
So. You think your plot out or let it happen?
I let it happen. I'd like to think it out, but I'm not organized enough.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to 10, mm-hmm. with 10 being the greatest thing that's ever happened in your life and 1 being labor, how does publishing your first novel stack up?
I mean, leaving aside marriage and parenting and all that stuff, 10. Yeah, it's pretty great.
You'll find a picture of writer Erica Raskin, plus a link leading to an excerpt from her first novel, Close, on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our coverage possible, comes from Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Eugene Stoltzfus, Janet Trentner, Joy Loving, Rory and Jamie Kutaya, and an anonymous donor. You'll find stories from the WMRA newsroom and more information at our website, WMRA.org. Be sure to like us on Facebook at WMRA Public Radio for a heads up on our coverage, and you can follow me on Twitter at WMRA Bob. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and Morning Edition host, so I'll see you in the morning. The BBC News is next.